100th show.
You didn't really think that was going to work.
Our survey said.
One 100 shows!
It's our centenary show!
And you know what? Not only that, we've had over 2 million downloads.
2 million downloads of Love Radio.
Insane.
Oh, that's ridiculous, isn't it? Quite cool, though, I have to say. Anyway,
thank you very much for downloading.
The thing that amazes me, that Axe said to me, right, well, he said to all of us, you know, oh, I've been doing some counting and it seems that we might be around 1 million downloads, and then says, oh, by the way, we don't include all of this shit, so it's actually over 2 million. I went and told some people about the 1 million downloads and they were like, fucking hell.
And it's actually...
And it's actually over 2 million.
It doesn't include,
stuff that you don't want to say.
Yeah, all sorts of stuff, basically.
But yeah. It doesn't include our amazing chunk of fictional downloads.
It doesn't include technical stuff.
Shut up, right?
Anyway,
it's reasonable, my stats generation.
It's season 5, episode 17. And my name's Chris Proctor.
I'm Adam Sweet.
I am John O'Bacon.
And I'm Stuart Langridge.
And what's in the show today?
I think we should, because we're at our 100th show, we should talk about 100 cool things that have happened since Lug Radio started. Absolutely. In the open source and free software community.
Absolutely. I want to talk about how I think the Gobuntu experiment has failed.
We'll talk very briefly about Lug Radio Live in the UK.
Mm. And John is going to try and convince us why evolution isn't the pile of shit that people argue it is, and I'm going to try and convince him otherwise.
Yep, and I'm also going to encourage Adam to use it for a long time.
And I end up having to use K-mail.
And just to...
Epic fail.
Just for people who are going to listen to the rest of the show, it's the end of the show.
We're 100 shows into Lug Radio. This is our 100th show. And to celebrate, here are 100 great things that have happened in open source since we started.
Elephant Stream.
Open source Java.
Open Solaris.
Frets on Fire.
Arduino.
EPC.
Compiz. Django.
2 million Lug Radio downloads.
Debian Etch.
Linux Expo.
The Open Document Format.
Tony Whitmore's Queen Speech.
John O'Bacon becomes Ubuntu Community Manager.
NetBSD 4.
Python 3000.
Open Source Second Life Client.
Lug Radio Live USA 2008.
Zen.
Tilda.
Open Advantage.
Sun Open Sources Project Looking Glass.
LVM 2.
Pulse Audio.
Defective by Design.
Windows Vista.
The Doodle Summer of Code.
Ruby on Rails.
KDE Nonlinear Video Editor.
Dell Ships Ubuntu Linux.
Lug Radio Live 2005.
System 76.
Banshee.
Firefox 1.0.
X.org.
Firefox 3.
My World of Metal being unbanned from Banshee.
Kernel 2.6.21.
Heartbeat 2.
The Microsoft Interoperability Promise.
Cairo.
Powertop.
WebKit.
Inkscape.
Jacosha.
NeurosOSD.
DRBD.
Scale.
The Peach and Apricot Projects.
Porting OGG to the Texas Instruments DSPs.
Aggregator.
DDWRT.
The Vile, Vile Gongathon.
Network Manager.
Red Hat making $50 million in profit.
Unslung.
Bizarre.
Cheese.
OpenBSD 3.5.
TurboCash.
Kristen Scheller fallen into a bin.
GIP, the GNOME IP calculator.
Perl 5.8.
Tremulous.
Dirac.
Tomboy.
X4.
The Linux Action Show.
Ubuntu.
KDE 4.
Asterix.
Linux Reality.
GStreamer.
ID Software open sourcing Quake 3 Arena.
The Creative Commons.
The Archos PMA 400.
Pigeon.
Akiga.
Novell pointing out that Scope don't actually own the Unix copyrights.
Google Android.
Aid, Chris, and the annoying spiky one joining the Lug Radio ranks.
Virtual Exim.
Red Hat 5.
LibDVD CSS.
Evolution.
WordPress.
The Open Lightstrip.
Rhythmbox.
The International Clock in GNOME.
For the second time, Adam Sweet joining Lug Radio.
GFS.
The Fish Shell.
The Nokia Internet Tablets.
The Haiku Project.
KRDC.
Efficient PC.
And the GPL version 3.
CentOS.
The NBD driver.
And Mozilla Prism.
Ah.
That's 100 things that we've done. I'm sure you can think of 100 more. Send them in. Speaking as a Gobuntu user, since Gobuntu Gutsy when it came out, I think I'm going to declare that the Gobuntu experiment has failed.
Okay, so first of all, explain what the Gobuntu experiment is.
Right, I don't know if Canonical view it as an experiment, but certainly I did. There was lots of people made noise about how we want a genuinely free software Linux distribution. We're sick of... I was one of these.
Yeah.
I was a loud voice among this, I freely admit this, that I wanted someone to put out there a distribution where you can genuinely be sure that it's completely free software. It's not full of drivers. That you don't have proprietary stuff wound into the distro. Gobuntu came out, and I was incredibly happy about it. I thought, wow, this is brilliant. Now Hardy has been released, and there's no Gobuntu with it, but I wouldn't in any way blame Canonical for that. I mean, Canonical stood up and said, you know, okay, you wanted this, we're doing it, we think it's a good idea, but we don't think we can do it by ourselves. And basically, no one stepped up, and it makes me sad. I'd have liked to have helped. I don't really know how to help.
The question is, in which case, as a member of that demographic, why didn't you help?
I didn't know.
And as a loud voice of someone who demanded it.
Exactly, yeah. I don't know what I could have done. I did ask a bit on the...
Oh, come on, you know how it works. People can do anything with the Linux distribution. No, you could have written documentation, you could have done packaging.
No. The problem wasn't that people were short of documentation or packaging. It was things... all that stuff. So documentation's already been written by the Ubuntu project. It's already been...
The documentation of how to run Gobuntu and the ethos and the freedom behind it still needs documenting.
Gobuntu is just Ubuntu with stuff taken out. So all the documentation just needs you to delete a couple of paragraphs, basically, kind of. Thing.
I think what Ak's trying to say here is probably it's quite hard. I mean, I'm not criticizing anybody for not doing stuff, but I think it's probably quite hard to be motivated to do stuff that doesn't fall comfortably within your skill set of which you enjoy doing. And so I'm guessing that you couldn't see what you could do that fell within your skill set that you would have found interesting to do.
I don't know what I could. I feel quite sad about it. You know, that I really hope that a community would build up and we get to a stage where. I could do things. I mean, software that I write and release is all free software anyway. You know, it's more when people say, well, okay, we need to work with the following webcams or something, or we need to make sure that this firmware isn't closed source. And I don't really know how to get involved in that. And yeah, so I admit some of the fault is mine for not getting involved, but a community didn't build up around it. So to be honest with you, the fact that there's been no official Gobuntu release, I've got no idea whether there's one in planning or whether it is there or not, but there hasn't been a big noise about it, and I think that's right, to be honest with you. The GNU Sense project have had exactly the same problem, that they've said, you know, we really want to do this, and you say, well, why isn't there GNU Sense? They say, because we don't have enough guys.
Sorry to interrupt you, Chris. Do you happen to know what it is that needed doing that nobody did? Or is it just a broader hands-on-deck issue?
I
would have thought it might be packaging or somebody keeping up with kernel revisions and all that kind of shit and repackaging it.
And it's a bit difficult to tell, but I think what's missing is that no community built up around it. There, in the same way that, I mean, if you said, what needs to...
John O'Bacon, fail.
My remit isn't Gobuntu.
He's not Gobuntu community manager, is he?
I mean, I'm there to grow... community around the Ubuntu project, and Gobuntu was a derivative of that project. But my time is spent on Ubuntu and Kubuntu.
I guess there's a kind of thing. If the community had started to build up, then you would have been given time to work on it. But
I mean,
until there's a community.
Sorry, I was only taking the piss. Yeah. I didn't mean to point fingers at you.
No, quite the opposite. I mean, I want to be very clear about this. This is not me expecting more of Canonical or more of the Ubuntu project or anything. It's more an observation that I really thought this free software thing is important, but it's not important to enough people to make it viable.
Yeah, so, I did a quick poll of people at work, and one of them admitted to having tried Ubuntu and said, I tried it for a bit... And then I got rid of it because I was fed up with my wireless not working.
Yeah.
And do you think that was really the problem? It's basically there aren't enough people who are willing to make that sacrifice.
I think the reason why it hasn't taken off is because it caters to a very, very small group of people. And now if you take computer users in general, take open source computer users in general, only a small proportion of those open source computer users will contribute to an open source project.
Oh, absolutely.
And then when you reduce that to a small group of people who want to run Gobuntu, and then you further equate the number of
companies. Bear with me.
I don't necessarily think the problem is that it's a small group. It's that it's not a self-sustaining group. Enlightenment, for example, the Enlightenment window manager caters to a very small amount of people because basically nobody's running it. But they've got enough people there to keep it going. I mean, they may have, I've got no idea how many people are involved in the Enlightenment project. I've got no idea how many people were involved in doing things for GoBuntu rather than just talking about it on mailers. But there were more people talking about it and not enough people doing it.
I think you're talking about the wrong community in some respects. People who use Ubuntu are not freedom lovers. No offense to Ubuntu users, it's not their priority. People who use Ubuntu want a nice working desktop.
I think it comes later for a lot of people. Yeah.
If you actually believe in the freedom, then you don't use Ubuntu. You don't start using Ubuntu. You start using OpenBSD, which has quite a nice sustaining community and refuses to do anything proprietary. And that they,
I disagree.
But it's just a different community to Ubuntu.
I disagree because I think people do use Ubuntu for freedom, but I think it's more of a general purpose freedom.
Admittedly,
it won't attract fanatics, not fanatics is the wrong word. It won't attract people with broadly the Free Software Foundation's perspective on freedom.
Yeah, I think you're talking about different edges of the free software sword, as it were. Yeah. I think what Chris is saying is that people aren't coming to Ubuntu for software freedom, as in GoBuntu, open source. Think they're not coming for the freedom of source code and freedom of rights and all that kind of thing. They're coming here because it's free. It's an alternative.
I disagree. I think people come to Ubuntu because they believe in software freedom.
I think
when I say this, I don't mean necessarily the majority of people, but I think that a lot of people, the reason why people use Ubuntu, they're people like Mr. Ben, right? Now, make him an example because I don't know his specific perspectives on freedom, but as someone like Mr. Ben, or probably a typical Lug Radio listener, is somebody who's going to use something like Ubuntu or Fedora or whatever because they believe in software freedom, but they might not necessarily have such a commitment to that freedom that they are unwilling to use.
I actually really don't think that's the case. I think most people come to Linux as an alternative to Windows and because it sounds interesting, and I think the belief in software freedom comes later.
I think there'll be a lot of people like that, but I think in many ways that there's a lot more people involved who will use Ubuntu because of freedom than you'd imagine. The other thing which I was going to say is where I disagree with you, Ak, on your point about Enlightenment is that I think that the two aren't comparable in the fact that, first of all, Enlightenment's been around for like 10 years or whatever.
Right, yeah, okay.
And Enlightenment came out around a time where it was perceived as kind of like, at one point, it was the future.
Oh, yeah, okay. But you could pick any other
still
project.
Supposed to be the future,
You could pick any other project where there's a very small but sustaining community. I mean, Haiku is another example here. Mm-hmm. The BIOS clone. Or DDWRT. Or, any small, tiny sofa. But small Linux.
Where I'd say it's more comparable in some ways is like comparing embedded communities. Because there's essentially a restriction on being a member of the GoBuntu community. The restriction is that the only people it's going to attract are people who have that level of association with freedom, right? Yeah. Compare that to something like an embedded community where the only people who can really test the software are people who've got those devices. Mm. You've got to have that ingredient to be able to contribute.
I think
something like Haiku is very general purpose. Something like Enlightenment is very general purpose.
I don't know enough about GoBuntu specifically to say that this is the case, but there's one thing I thought about here. I think most self-sustaining free software projects seem to focus around a single driving force, a kind of benevolent dictator like Ubuntu and the Linux kernel. And was GoBuntu, do you think, the product, the idea of a single
there
guy
wasn't
who's
any one,
prepared
one
to drive it forward at all costs?
Possibly so, yeah, absolutely. I mean, to be honest with you, my thought is more really that... Now, I am quite disillusioned with my hardcore end of the community.
Right.
Because, we've been saying for years, what we need is a truly free software thing, and then there've been two truly free software things. Three if you count Utotu, which is the one thing the Free Software Foundation have decided to anoint. But there's that, there's GNUSense, there's GoBuntu, and basically none of them have got off the ground because they do not attract enough support. Which to me says, well, okay, genuine free software to the exclusion of all else requirements, they're just not important enough, and we should shut up.
Opinion without contribution, shocker.
I was
amazing,
say,
eh?
I've got
a thunk it.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, you Jono, have been saying this for years, and I always thought, well, no, I mean, I don't actually believe that's the case, and turns out I was wrong.
Do you think the fact that there are three different officially blessed distros has kind of divided up what is a percentage of a percentage, as we said earlier, of the community? So there's a fairly small number, and then you split them over three distros, plus, you know, whatever else other people are doing as well. Yeah, you know, writing actually drivers or something.
GoBuntu was supposed to be the Free Software Foundation, or the GNU Project's anointed free software distribution, after they decided they couldn't sustain GNU Sense. I might be wrong, but...
No.
GNU Sense is the one they've always backed.
Okay.
They backed GNU Sense by... In concept, the only one they've said you should go and use is called Utotu. I've never heard of it. It's got nothing to do with Ubuntu. It's vague similarity.
Well,
in
I've
names.
Taken away from Chris's point there. So to restate it,
do you think it's fragmented and already tiny community?
Yeah.
And my answer is no, I don't think so.
Do you think there are enough people to sustain it if they?
No, I think most of the people who really want free software stuff, really shout about free software stuff, are either hypocrites who say I really want this but haven't actually run GoBuntu or GNU Sense because it doesn't support their wireless card, or they're busy hacking together their own system out of Linux from scratch.
Interestingly, I was thinking about this.
I have now run GoBuntu on my home laptop for 6 months, and the fact it doesn't support my wireless card, but I don't care because it doesn't use wireless, it's plugged in all the time. The fact that this laptop's basically irrelevant, it just lives on my desk in my house. And it's been fine.
Of people,
essentially the reason I have moved away from it is because I wanted to upgrade to Hardy, and there is no GoBuntu Hardy because it hasn't attracted the support to make it viable.
I think what's interesting as well is that just as a side point is that of all the people I've met who've talked about a real basically on the hardline, more hardline kind of side of freedom, of everybody that I've met, pretty much every single person that I've met doesn't subscribe to their own theory, their own ethos. I know everyone who I've met will use non-free software, no matter, and they'll be hardline about it.
Stick my hand up, right? I believe that GoBuntu is a fucking brilliant idea, and it's something that we need, and I don't run it because I couldn't see the point of owning a laptop without my wireless card and my graphics card.
I mean, I have said repeatedly in the past that the fact that you fail to live up to your own ethos is a fault in you, but it's not a fault in the ethos. I take your point.
And this doesn't just apply to you, it applies to other people who have been very, very, very hardline about it. I don't think I've met anybody who's been hardline about their ethos and not said, oh, well, yeah, but, you know, I need to use this.
Stallman.
I need to use this wireless driver.
Stallman.
Well, he's the one example.
Yeah, he is the one example.
I know people at the Free Software Foundation who use non-free software.
Yeah, so do I.
And it's like...
Yeah, I mean, you're aiming towards it, and the fact that you haven't yet achieved what you're preaching doesn't make what you're preaching a bad idea. It just means that you're not quite as good at it as you could
be. Yeah, but when you go around bollocking people for not using free software...
Which is why you shouldn't bollock people.
Yeah, which is what we've said in the past.
That's a different discussion. But yeah, I mean, basically, you know, the idea, this is why I said the experiment, where saying, you know, we think that this should happen, but we need to grow a community around it, and the community turned out to all be... You know, all mouth and no trousers. To my mind, that the fact that people did not step up to make GoBuntu viable, people have not stepped up to make GNU Sense viable.
Just before you cut in, Chris, on that point, just to clarify from Canonical's perspective.
Yeah, sorry, I'm not asking you for an official Canonical word here or anything.
As far as I'm aware, the GoBuntu was not an experiment. It was a project, but it was very much a community project. Yeah, I know you said that's my spin on it. GoBuntu was a community project, but it needs community to run. And in the same way that Zubuntu is a community project, and Ubuntu Studio is, and like you say, I mean, if there isn't a community around it, and it has struggled. I mean, there's not been a lot of interest in it. There's been a lot of people who've said, you know, this is a great idea, and some people which have said, this is a shit idea. But it's not had much uptake.
The question now I was going to say is kind of where do you go from here?
I was going to say that as well.
Kind of, yeah, okay, so your suspicion, this experiment has not worked particularly well.
I suspected that you might have some suggestions.
Well, I don't have any suggestions particularly. I'm saying, you know, kind of, okay, it's not worked particularly well so far. What do we do?
Well,
if it's important enough to actually, you know, believe in and stand up for it, then we need to do something.
Now, you see, there... you run into the problem of being me, which the only logically consistent position to take is that of a fire-breathing zealot, but it doesn't work. Which means that essentially, my approach of saying we need to stick to 100% freedom at all times basically doesn't work.
I think you're being pessimistic here. I think the experiment has, when you say it hasn't worked, what you really mean is it hasn't worked so far. There's no reason why someone now hearing this could not go, hang on, that's actually a really good idea. I think I should step up and do something.
And if someone does step up, I'd love that.
I am looking at you at this moment.
If there is some way that I can... I mean, I don't understand how to do things like how to take firmware out of the kernel and what it does. I don't get it. And I have asked people, before Gobuntu came out, I wrote a blog post saying what I'd like to do is I'd like to make a completely free Ubuntu. If someone can give me some pointers as to how the hell I can find out which bits are debatably non-free, I'll write a script which takes Ubuntu and turns it into what became Gobuntu. You know, it walks through your lib firmware folder and takes stuff out, and it walks through the kernel and recompiles it with certain options off and stuff. I was quite happy to do that, but I don't know how to answer those questions, and I don't know how to find out the answers. I don't know where to start.
Sorry, because I've got a couple of questions. I don't want you to finish the segment without me asking these questions. Okay. And I'm going to forget them soon, right? So, I mean, branching off from what Chris was saying, with what we have now in the Linux world, do you think this is an achievable dream that we can do now, just that we haven't done it right yet?
No. I used to think it was an achievable dream, and we have tried to achieve it, and I can't imagine what you would do differently. You know, this was a major...
Unless you're going to do everything yourself.
A major... Yeah. I mean, not as a sustainable community ideal. I mean, yeah, if one individual guy wants to stand up and say, I'm going to make myself a completely free Linux distribution, I mean, that's essentially what I try and do with Ubuntu. You know, yes. I install Ubuntu, and then I try and make sure I only install free software on it, and so on.
You've got the benevolent dictator.
Yeah, it's just a community of
who's
one.
Who's going to drive it forwards for their own beliefs. Sorry, you're not allowed to cut in. Shut up. My last question, right? Alternatives, right? Where do you think you can go from here? Are you going to run OpenBSD? Mandriva do a completely free version, because I reviewed it by mistake.
Gnu Sensor 2.0 has just come out or something, hasn't it?
Yeah, to be honest with you, I think, well, maybe I shouldn't be such a zealot.
Do you think you're just going to have to suck it up for
maybe I'll just run Ubuntu and then try and be as free as I can.
Really?
I think you're being very depressed about this, aren't you?
I am.
Well, I mean, he's just lived it for six months. I am quite
depressed about it.
6 months is nothing.
It is when you've got no distribution.
What do I do now? I can't upgrade to Gobuntu Hardy. It isn't there.
Use GNU Sense.
Use GNU Sense.
Haven't they said that they've got the same problem?
What's the point?
Start learning how to
because
create Ubuntu
the point is encouraging people like me to join you. The point is what you've been talking about for the last 7 years.
Yeah, okay.
Is a belief in free software. Yeah, it's not easy. And
So when you've repeatedly told me that I'm too much of a zealot and I should moderate my views, and this is me attempting to moderate my views, I'm now being told I'm wrong.
No, what I'm saying is that you can run a free software machine.
Which I'm doing.
You're not.
I am.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am.
Not on your work laptop, you know.
No, I'm not on my work laptop. No, you're quite right.
But my point here is not so much that you should... I do think, and you have been, more moderate in your views, because I think, you know, at one point you were the guy who was bollocking people, which is what you said you don't think you should do, and you've changed in that regard. However, where I think you are being too pessimistic is that you can today run a completely free software distribution. The difference is that it's not point and click. Right? So you can go and get GNU Sense and you can install it and it'll work. And yes, some stuff might not work, but that's what the price you pay for freedom. Right? My point is that you can still, you shouldn't feel depressed because your ethics can't be executed. Your ethics can be executed. It just means that you've got to go the extra mile.
It's not a question of extra work. I don't mind doing extra work. It's missing out on stuff. If I run GNU Sense, last time I looked at GNU Sense, it was 2.4 kernel.
Yeah.
So there's no Project Utopia, nothing. That's not going the extra mile. That's just having a load of stuff just not be there.
Well, it's, and wireless cards, and, you know, and...
Absolutely. At which point, okay, so maybe I'm not prepared to go that far anymore.
Well, if you're not, so be it, yeah.
We've lost.
I think you're being very, sorry to restart the conversation, but I think you're basically going, oh, we've had a setback. Oh, well, let's give up.
I understand
why you're down, but I don't think it's giving up.
I don't think it's an individual
lost
setback.
Lost a battle, not the war.
I don't think it is a battle. I think it's a failure of the concept.
No, it's not. What it is, I think what it is that...
What could have happened differently then? I mean, I'm being quite serious here.
Gobuntu could be successful, right?
If what
Gobuntu could be successful, but there was a guy who made a statement when I was at Community One in San Francisco who said, community is not about having enough hands on deck, it's about having the right hands on deck.
Agreed.
Right? And that's completely true. The problem with some of these projects, and it doesn't just apply to completely free software projects, it applies to any project, is that they don't have the right hands on deck.
Agreed.
Right? And sometimes you need to find those people. The problem is that these projects in concept are not bad projects. They just don't have the right people to drive them forward. Now,
agreed again.
You know, it needs someone like that. Now, that project could be saved by finding that person. And that person could be you, or it could be somebody else, or it could be you finding somebody else.
Yeah, it could be.
But the point is that, I mean, I, you know, much as we've debated for the last 4 years about free software, I believe in free software as much as you do. And I believe it's the right way forward. I believe that that's the way we're going. And we will get there. And every so often people feel a little less than motivated because it feels like it's a constant uphill struggle. And you've got all these wankers who shout a lot but don't do anything. And that's the frustration. But those people, their contribution in their eyes is punditry. It's not an actual contribution, right? And what we need to be doing in my life, I said before, is that we need to not encourage that kind of behavior. We need to encourage people to actually get involved in whatever way they can. Anybody can get involved in a project such as Gobuntu or GnuSense or whatever and contribute their support, either in terms of supporting the project and testing it. And I mean, Dave Morley, right, came to the open source community, knew fuck all about computers, right? Adam came to the open source community, knew fuck all about computers. Adam's now an international podcast hero, right? Dave Morley...
arguably still knows fuck all about
And Dave Morley is, you know, one of the leaders in the Ubuntu ISO team.
I understand what you're saying. What the Gobuntu project seems to need is not something that I know how to provide. You know, I mean, it might be something you know how to provide, Jono, as a community manager, but it's not, I'm not suggesting that you do so, but the point is that the skills I have are not particularly skills that they need. It would be like if you complained about your wireless dropping out occasionally, I said, well, you know, you're part of the open source community, write a network driver. And your answer will be, well, that's not really what I do. I do other things.
I agree.
The stuff that I do, I'm happy to contribute my time to the Gobuntu project. It's just not my time they need.
My point is not directed towards you. My point is that the concept of an entirely free software distribution to that level of free software is possible. It's just that this particular instance, it's kind of like saying, you know, one person decides to have a go at building something that flies, right? And it doesn't work, so therefore the concept of mechanical flight is impossible, right? What happens is people get refining the technology until the point where you could get an enormous beam can in the air and fly to, you know...
We're not talking about a refinement of the thing. Now, what you're saying is it needs the right people to step up.
It is a refinement. It's a refinement of community processing.
You're saying that it needs the right people to step up, yeah? But the right people have now had a couple of chances to step up and haven't done so. There's a law of diminishing returns in setting up a project and hoping that the right people will turn up. And those people who know how to find proper community members, like you, Jono, and the guy who runs Fedora's community, the guy who runs OpenSUSE's community, aren't involved in the project. And if I said to you, John, I'd like you to be more involved in Gobuntu, you'd say, well, it's not really what I do. So you're talking about either finding someone who's really good with the community and is interested in Gobuntu, and so far no one like that showed up, or someone who's really interested in managing a community and is interested in Gobuntu and no one like that has showed up.
I think we go back.
I don't know how many times you can keep setting up a project no one like this exists.
I think you have to go back to first principles a little bit here. This is your itch. Learn to scratch your itch.
Yeah.
And okay, I admit, you aren't a kind of a hardcore packager of distributions, and therefore may not be particularly good at it. But if you do
isn't the problem.
But whatever the problem is.
It's building a sustainable community, which I don't know anything about. It's like expecting John O'Droid Network drivers.
If you start doing it, and yeah, okay, this shouldn't be just directed at you. This is just like in general. If somebody starts doing it, they may not be very good at it. But it's like, yeah, the small pebble, and then somebody else comes along and goes, oh, actually, I'm better at that than you do, so I'll take that bit off you. And it builds up that way. Yeah. It's actually, somebody has to start doing it. You can't just sit down and go, well, what we need is a community.
But the thing is, how did this start in the first place? I mean, Kubuntu, Jonathan Riddell.
Yeah.
I believe it needs somebody who's going to take this thing by the horns and scream from the fucking rooftop.
I would love it if someone like that showed up.
I'm not suggesting it ought to be
Kabunti's
you.
Everyone seems to be suggesting it ought to be me, and if I don't do it, then you go, it's my fault.
No, not at all.
Then I'd love it. Yes, I agree with you. If someone like that showed up, I think it would be brilliant.
But I think what you're talking about...
Since I can't... I can't create someone like that.
Yeah.
So all I can do is say, well... It's failed. I hope someone comes along and does this. Otherwise, it's failed.
Just because it hasn't happened in one instance doesn't mean the concept fails. That's the point. Yes, it's not been particularly successful with Gobuntu. Yes, it's been hard work with GNUSense. The concept isn't fundamentally flawed, right? That means that the first time someone tries to build a free software operating system who isn't Linus Torvalds and they fail because they can't get it to boot, right? Doesn't mean that the concept of a free software operating system fails. Look at Linux.
I agree with you then. I'll retract my earlier statement. I don't think the concept has failed. And if someone tries the concept again, I'll probably run it. But there's nothing else I can do other than wait for someone to do it.
The only thing I disagree with you slightly on in that is that like you used the example earlier on of, you know, if a wireless access point failed, then someone could say to me, you know, write a wireless access driver or something like that. The reason why that would be that, to me, that would be vaguely possible to a degree, but it would involve me not only learning how network hardware works, but it would also involve me learning how to program and all the rest
of it. Yeah.
So it's like quite a significantly difficult thing to do.
Yes.
I don't believe that packaging. Hang on.
No.
I don't believe that packaging, in one sense, when we look at the core skills required in building a distribution, one is community growth, the other one is undoubtedly packaging. I don't believe that the skills required for packaging. Looking at you specifically, you could build packages. You have built packages.
I agree with you. That's not what they need. Gobuntu is Ubuntu with stuff removed from packages.
Yes.
I could do the removal. I don't know what to remove, and I don't know how to find out what it is.
You can find out.
How?
I don't believe that.
I have asked people to point me at things, and no one's done so. I don't know where to ask.
Speak to Ben Collins.
And say what?
And say what needs removing.
I suspect the way to start then is actually to get... Hardy, whatever the latest version of Ubuntu is, strip out all the things that you know are blatantly not free software, and release it and go, here's a distribution, I'm attempting to make it as free as possible. Help!
The thing is...
Please file bugs about anything that isn't...
Surely that's the thing, what the Gobuntu should be trying
the
to
thing
do,
is
that is what the Gobuntu project we're trying to do.
The thing is, though, is that for Gobuntu to release a release means that somebody who is a developer knows what needs to be stripped out. It's a case of finding that person. I can help put you in touch with the right people who could find out what that information is. I mean, you know Colin Watson.
Yeah, I know. I asked about it on the Gobuntu mailing list.
Did you ask Colin?
On the Gobuntu mailing list seemed to me like a logical place to ask this question.
I wouldn't necessarily say so.
Why?
I would suggest that ought to be the logical place.
I'd say it ought to be, but I'd say in many cases when your project's set up, it's not the logical place.
That's really skewed, surely.
You think it ought to be, but the people who actually know what are in all those packages are the people, the Ubuntu developers, not the Gobuntu developers.
What you do is you look in the maintainer file, the maintainer field in the package, and you contact
them.
In
which package?
In the kernel packages, then.
That's the point. I mean, I don't know what stuff's... non-free and what isn't.
But that's the point. You email the maintainer and you ask them.
Yeah, but you email the maintainer of what?
All the packages.
All the packages. All 12,000 of them. And say, is your package free according to the FSF? And they go, fuck me, I don't know.
No, you look at the, you go for the low hand.
That's the point. I don't know where to start. I mean, yes, if, it's not you, doing
you're,
the work.
You're in a position, what you're doing
to do.
Is you're in a position of shouting, I don't know where to start, instead of actually listening about how you can start. There is ways of finding this out. Yes, there's 12,000 packages or 20,000 packages, whatever. In the repositories, right?
Yeah.
There's tons of packages. The vast majority of those packages are free software, right? The vast majority of those packages that are in those repositories are free software. I'd say the place where you find out is you speak to your people you know at the FSF.
Here's the problem, right? Is Firefox free software? I'm not trying to have a pop at your viewpoint. I thought Firefox was free software until the FSF popped up and said it wasn't. So it's not just a case of
artwork.
By definition, you can't take the Ubuntu project's view on what's free software because
I know,
some people disagree.
But what you can do is you can easily identify the major key themes. Kernel firmware, imagery, right? Trademark issues, right? Those are the key themes that people look at. You can do them straight away. It's as if you're saying, because we don't know everything and have a perspective on everything in the world and whether it's free or not, and we can't find that out, therefore we shouldn't bother at all.
Yes. That's exactly what I'm saying.
Well,
because,
I disagree.
Because if I say, I fixed 25 packages, you'll still say, Mr. Bacon, but you're still using non-free software, you see? You're a zealot who doesn't practice what he preaches. At which point I start thinking, well, maybe you're right. I mean, maybe what you've been saying all these years is right, but I should just give up.
The point I've made in the past has basically been, I don't care people using, people being strong with their ethics. The thing I disagree with is when people ram their ethics down my throat and say, no compromise, no compromise, right? When they say that, and then they compromise themselves. And yes, in those particular situations...
Sorry, you mean deliberately compromise themselves?
Well...
As in going, I'm going to use that, it's non-free, but whatever.
Yeah, I knowingly know that it's non-free, yeah. And I'm going to use it anyway because, you know, I actually do want my wireless card to work. To me, if people are that zealous about it, yes, those people should be treated by their own ethic, right? And yes, in that situation, you have done that in the past. You have been hypocritical in the past, and yes, I've given you shit about it, right?
Yes.
And yes, and if your viewpoint is, well, yeah, I can't do it, you know, so therefore I'm going to be less hardcore about it, then so be it, right? But there are a lot of people who do genuinely want a free software system, and they want... they don't want to run the firmware, blah, 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 blah. And they have that perspective for themselves, but they don't ram that down people's throats. They're the kind of people that we want to be targeting, right? They're the kind of people that will be able to help out and will be able to get involved.
But they're the kind of people who would have been involved in Gobuntu, would have been involved in GNUSense, and they're not.
Yeah. But this is what happens when you've got, this is what happens when you've got a community that's largely born out of ethos as opposed to software development. Most people are involved in Ubuntu, as an example, I'd say, have a mutual appreciation of technology and a mutual appreciation of freedom. But the thing that keeps them ticking is the technology side of things.
Yes.
They execute the technology in the search of freedom, right? The difference with these people is that they come with it from the opposite standpoint. Freedom is the most important thing, and technology is a means of getting to freedom.
Yeah.
Right? It's more like philosophy than computer science.
And that's
my
point. That's why I think that community is not sustainable.
But I think that...
What you just said, because people come in... That's what happens when you get a community born out of ethos.
But I think... I don't know. I think you can do
I'm going to shut you both up now, right? Because this has turned into an open source pub argument.
In my defense, I've been waggling my finger to end the segment
That's why I'm shutting you all up, right? I had another fantastic point to make then, and I don't know what it is anymore. Do you think, right? As I said, when this thing that this completely free operating system isn't achievable right now, right? Are we getting freer, do you think, in terms of source code? And do you think this thing, one iteration of this is going to work sooner or later, given the fact that apparently the goal is a free desktop, not a Linux desktop? Do you think, like, if we get, the new wireless stack, I believe, is supposed to be, more free software, free open source drivers are going to work. Maybe I'm pulling that out of my ass, to be honest. But and eventually, the NVIDIA drivers are going. The free NVIDIA drivers are going to be good enough to do 3D acceleration, and the ATI open source drivers will work. Do you think we're getting there? And one iteration of this idea will work sooner or later in the next 3 years?
I don't know. I think we have the potential to be freer, but as more. You know, I mean, you had no choice but to be free 5 years ago on Linux because there wasn't any bloody proprietary software. As there's more proprietary software appearing on Linux, there's more desire to use proprietary software and be less free. But equally, I think as the community grows, we've got more people writing free software equivalents, like Nouveau, say. Mm-hmm. So free software is getting better and there's more of it. So we have the potential to be more free, but at the same time, I think there's more inclination to use proprietary stuff.
I think that one day we will have a completely free operating system.
Yeah.
Free source code. Everything will be free. Because the economic model behind software is changing, and that's what's happening. I believe, genuinely, that all drivers in the future will be free software.
It's not just drivers. It's things.
Well, I'm talking about drivers. There'll always be proprietary software.
Yeah.
I suspect
we'll reach a stage where you can run it quite happily as long as you avoid, you know,
Do you think we'll hit a point where, I mean, take you as an example, John, or Adam, say, we'll hit a point where free software is good enough for everything you want to do, that we'll have something where you won't think, I want to use Skype because it's better than the free alternatives.
Yeah.
We'll be good enough, the free software community will be good enough at everything. It's not that you'll be able to go entirely free, because I have done, you know, Gobuntu entirely free, been running it for 6 months.
Yeah,
it's whether people will actually, or relatively ordinary users who are prepared to compromise won't have to.
I don't believe that you will be able to make a direct correlation between the best of breed and free software. So using Skype's a great example.
Yeah, if you want to use out, not drivers,
consumer voice over IP, Skype is by far the best solution.
Yes.
I believe like you that in a couple of years, sooner or later, we're going to be able to run a completely free operating system. And if you want to put the proprietary application on top, like Skype or fucking Nero burning ROM for Linux or Lin DVD or something like that, you'll be able to.
But you'll reach a stage where basically email and all that kind of stuff, all the normal things.
Yeah. You know what? One project which seems to get an inordinate amount of shit is Evolution, the mail client.
Not like the thing where we used to be apes.
And some of us still are apes, eh? Anyway, Evolution, it seems to get a lot of crap from people, you know? I mean, it was kind of... I think a lot of people see it as just an Outlook clone, and therefore people give Outlook shit, and therefore they give Evolution shit. But I've been using Evolution now for my work email for certainly since I started at Canonical, but I used to use it for my OpenAdvantage email when I was there as well. So I've been using it for about 4 years, and it's getting better. And I actually think it's a really good client. I think it's a really good mail client, and I think it's pretty good for the calendaring side of things. And now that it's got like Google Calendar integration, which I haven't tested yet, but that seems to work quite well from what I've heard. And the, you know, the contacts element, and you know, I'm accessing two accounts. I'm accessing my Google Mail via IMAP. I'm accessing my Canonical and Ubuntu email via IMAP. I just think it's quite cool, and I'm just wondering what you guys think, because I just think it's unfair that it gets so much shit. You know.
Well, before we get that far, then you're obviously an Evolution user, Jono. What do you guys use to read your email? Are you Evolution users?
I'm a Thunderbird user, and I find Evolution quite irritating.
Okay.
Why is that?
Hi, my name's Adam, and I don't like Evolution.
I actually don't. I mean, I find, maybe we ought to get into this later, but I find it hard to quantify, or at least qualify, why I don't like Evolution that much. The one thing that always sticks out in my mind is it wastes screen real estate with all the fucking text formatting things, even when you're writing plain text email, and I find it clunky. I find it's not preferences dialogues, your account setup dialogues, just a fucking wash with options, and far more, even though I know what I'm doing, far more confusing than it probably ought to be.
Right. Christoph?
I'm a Kmail user, because it's...
Party like it's 1995.
Because it's simple.
Because you hate usability.
Fucking Peter Cannon has just exploded. Really
Kmail is actually quite nice.
I've used it.
I use Kmail because, you know, it kind of manages email and doesn't do all the other shit like calendaring, which I find
manages email really well. In a motif theme.
It takes email.
Stop being mean.
What do you want it to do? It receives email, it puts them in folders for me, and it lets me read them. Woohoo! What else does a mail client really need to do? I mean, I could talk about the fact that it's all mail directories underneath rather than inbox, but you know,
right.
In reality,
we probably have that right.
I'm kidding.
It's the only time I've ever looked at Evolution. I've never used it, but I looked at it and it just looked horrifically complicated.
I actually used to use Kmail as my mail client for 2 years, and
years being 1997 and 1998, presumably.
Yeah, I was wearing a shell suit. That pretty much sums up when I was using Kmail. So, yeah.
Last week. Jollis is sitting there in his shell suit.
His cap on backwards.
A snap bracelet.
Goodness me.
And you, my friend?
I have two mail accounts, my work mail account and my home mail account. My home mail account I just read with the Gmail web interface. And my work mail account I use Evolution because my work email server is Exchange. And I need to talk to Exchange. And I need the calendaring stuff, the Exchange calendaring stuff. Right. Evolution talks to it. And it does it all fine. As far as I'm aware, nothing else talks to Exchange as well as Evolution does, which is why I use it. But it does it all fine, everything. It is an Outlook clone, right? It looks like Outlook and it feels like Outlook. And I used to use Outlook when I was in my previous job. We were Windows through and through, and I was Windows on the desktop then as well. So I used Outlook. And in lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of ways, it's like Outlook. But the problem I run into is that the things that I actually liked about Outlook, there weren't many, but there were some, Evolution doesn't do.
Right.
We'll talk about them in a bit.
I despise Outlook, incidentally, and I've no good reason why other than it's just Outlook.
Yeah. You see, I used to use Outlook when I was a web developer, and it was... I actually quite liked it. This was when I was at university, that time, but it was...
Before I believed in freedom.
Before, yeah. you know, but... I don't know. The thing I can understand people not liking Evolution because people have different preferences in terms of software. I can understand why some will say I prefer Thunderbird, and I can also understand why maybe a couple of years ago people didn't like it because it was quite unstable a couple of years ago.
Yes.
Yeah. It works.
It's a lot better now. It's not crashed on me once.
Yeah, I find it works really well, and I like the integration as well. So, for example, you know, the fact that it integrates with the GNOME clock and things like that.
Two different kinds of integration there. The first one is that it's much better at tying into the rest of GNOME, and GNOME's better at tying into it than other things.
It integrates with the GNOME clock.
So
it tells you the time.
When you click on the clock, it will show your task list in there. It'll add your calendar.
When you click on the clock in GNOME, it drops down a little calendar. Of this month, and days where you've got an appointment in Evolution will be highlighted in the little calendar.
Just think of all the opportunities for KMail with all the clocks in KDE4. I mean, it's incredible.
I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if you're not running full on KDE4, are you?
No.
You're running Fluxbox and KMail. You're running GNOME and KMail.
Yeah,
weird. Isn't that like having cornflakes with tomato ketchup on them?
I like to think I use the best of breed from wherever it's from.
Really?
So why are you running KMail?
Stop being sarcastic.
It trashes and corrupts my mail, it only corrupts one mail as opposed to the entire inbox.
Well, okay, well, obviously, Chris is determined to talk about the advantages of mail.
As a mail system.
It may have just been the fact that it was the first one I found when I installed this in my box, and I've stuck with it ever since as well. You know?
As boring as it is, being a mail admin of sorts, mail DIR is the way forward.
For those people out there in the audience who haven't got a clue what we're talking about, there are basically three ways that your mail client can store your emails. Mbox is the oldest format, where basically all the mails in an individual mailbox in a folder are in one big long text file. Mail DIR is all the mails in one individual folder are in individual files, one per mail, and then there's various complicated proprietary things which are neither. Like Outlook's PST format, and various other mail clients.
Mail does it a different way.
Apple Mac Mail is Mbox-ish.
Yes.
It's not quite Mbox.
This is the problem with mail formats. They're all different, no matter what you say. Everyone does it differently.
Yeah, I mean, the Mbox format has been around the longest.
But the reason why Mboxes are shit is because as soon as you want to write to them, you've got to lock it first, so you can't do anything else with it until you release the lock.
Because it's one big file, and you can't write just a bit of a big file.
So everyone should use KMail.
However, mail DIRs are supposed to be really slow, because you've got to enumerate the direction before you do anything.
If you've got a folder with 10,000 emails in it, then that basically equates to a folder on your disk with 10,000 little files.
Jono is looking incredibly bored at this point.
Yeah. Sorry, did you say something? I was dying a death.
To be honest with you, this is one of those things where mail DIR is actually probably technically better in the same way that Betamax is technically better than VHS.
Yeah.
But... whatever it lost.
The thing is with Mbox, you can do pretty much anything with it. You can move it to anything and from anything. Sorry, proceed.
Adam, yes. You said earlier on that you don't like Evolution, and you're not entirely sure why.
It feels, I don't know.
I've
been a Thunderbird guy, right? Because, I mean, I always used to use Yahoo Mail web interface anyway, right? The point at which I was using KDE, I was using Yahoo, so I never really used KMail for anything. When I started using Thunderbird for real is just before I left university, and also when I started my first job, right? I had my work machine was an Apple Mac. It was an iBook and then a PowerBook. And I ran Mac, was it Apple Mail, mail.app?
Yeah.
And I couldn't integrate GPG with it or PGP, so without paying for PGP, I didn't want to do that. I wanted to run fucking Enigmail. So I decided I exported all of my mail out of mail.app and into Mbox and then imported that into Thunderbird. And I like Thunderbird because I could run it on anything, right? Whether I'm on Windows, Mac, or Linux, I can run the same mail application on all operating systems. And I get the same interface on all of them, and it works the same way. Mbox, you can move anywhere. I can move my mail across machines just by copying the directory over.
Interestingly, I mean, one thing I like about Evolution in some ways is the fact that it feels... This is one of those things where you just get a feeling from how something works as opposed to any things you can tick off, but... To me, it feels like a mature email client.
Yes.
It feels...
I would agree. It's been around...
long time.
Like 7, 8, 9 years. And like
it's and I'm discovering little things about it. So, for example, you know, one thing, like anybody when you type in emails will use bullet points, right? And something in Evolution, which I only discovered recently, actually, probably an idiotic thing to discover late, is when you're typing an email, you can actually select from the drop-down box and it'll say, like, bullet point mode or something. So when you type, and this is in a plain text email, so when you type in your bullet point, it all wraps it properly, and all your text goes underneath the bullet point, so it's properly indented. And
it's a plain text email.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I've seen people who I've worked with, and they'll send out these emails with these bullet points, and it'll all be properly indented, but it's like plain text. And I was like, how the fuck does that work, you know? Whereas me, I just, like, tab, and then it all kind of wraps around like normal. It sounds like such a silly little point, but it really makes you write readable emails. It's like little things like that.
But like you said, because it's a mature application, I think a lot of people's objection to Evolution is, I mean, this is a bit of a program analogy, so bear with me, non-programmers, but it's like the war in between people who think that you should use an IDE for programming and people who don't think you should use an IDE for programming.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, Evolution is kind of the IDE of mail clients. Yeah, it's like Visual Studio or like Outlook. Yeah. I mean, my big problem with Evolution, when I used Outlook, I used to spend ages sorting all my mail into folders and everything. And then I started using Gmail, and I thought, I know what I want, because I very rarely look through all my old email, and when I do, I search it anyway. I'll just have one folder called Archive and put everything in it, the way Gmail works. So in Outlook at work, I created a folder called Archive, and then I created a button on my toolbar called Archive, which was about 4 lines of VB script and just took the mail, Visual Basic for Applications, rather, built into Outlook, VBA. And it took the mail that was highlighted or the mail you were looking at, dropped it into your Archive folder, right? Dead easy. As far as I can tell, doing that in Evolution is dead hard. You can write an E, so it's enough like Outlook that it's got that whole kind of big, slightly clunky IDE feel, but it doesn't have things like VBA. There are things called E plugins, and I've tried to write an E plugin and I don't understand.
Can I see a question? I've heard, you know, like some people will separate their mail into different folders and things like that.
If you could ask about virtual folders.
No. Okay. I just keep all my mail in the inbox. All of it.
I know.
I've got like, you know.
To me, that's
in my work mail. I've got like 16,000 emails in there.
I can't do that. That to me is fucking cluttered brain syndrome.
Why?
Because there's just, I prefer to keep my inbox reasonably clean.
So I only see the top 20 emails, and if I want anything, I can search for it.
Yeah, well, then you've got to fucking form a club foot with your brain around all the things that you're not going to do.
The reason I don't do it is that I try and make my inbox my to-do list.
That's what I do, yeah, but I use it by ticking.
But you're having to. No, you see, I've got two levels of things. There's the idea, in theory, I'm not brilliant at keeping to this, but the idea is that if I don't have to deal with an email, I send it away into the archive folder. If it's in my inbox, I need to do something about it. If it's starred or ticked or whatever, I have to do something about it, and it's quite important that I do so.
Oh, right.
So I've got these kind of three levels, whereas you've got two levels. You've got need to do something about it, and I don't need to do something about it, and that's it.
Yeah.
If you wanted the third level, how would you implement it? And the answer is, you couldn't.
If I went to the third level, then I'd add it to a to-do list.
Can I ask a question?
I don't do to-dos, because what happens, every now and again, I'll rediscover a to-do list I set up 6 months ago, and half of it I still haven't done, and the other half is all irrelevant stuff like buy milk, which obviously I've done since.
We use something called Trax, which is a little web application.
I have seen it, in fact. I use Remember the Milk. I'm trying to get back into you keeping a to-do list.
Can I ask you a question, right?
Yeah.
Could this, like, two-tier system of doing things and ignoring things, is this why everybody says that you don't respond to mail?
Yes.
Or is this just because you get to be fair, you get fucking thousands of mails.
It depends on the mail that you're responding to. In terms of personal mail, yes, I don't respond to mail very efficiently. In terms of work mail, I'm pretty good.
Once it drops out of your top 20 mails that are visible, does this mean it's
out of mind at that point?
Basically, in terms of work mail, very different for work mail and private mail. For work mail, if something needs tending to, or something I should look at in the future, I will tick it and mark it. And then basically what I'll do is I'll go through it subject by subject. So what I'll do is, let's say I'm having a conversation about, let me think of something recently. about growing an element of Motu. I'll do a search for the subject, and then I'll go through and I'll read all the emails, and then I'll respond and untick them.
Right. Okay.
And I'll basically do that every day, every morning.
So you essentially do a kind of task-based search.
Essentially what I do is I highlight mail that I should give a shit about. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like any to-do list, there's stuff that's being ticked, and then you kind of think, oh, I'll get back to that, or it's not that important. And then every so often you go through and clean it out and then get rid of it. Like I did that when I was in San Francisco, and I went through and I just basically binned about...
Have you not thought about, I mean, because Evolution's the most mature mail client,
I argue with that.
Certainly on the GNOME desktop, what there doesn't seem to be is a lot of integration with other stuff that isn't GNOME. I mean, if you look at Thunderbird, there's like a million Thunderbird extensions. Now, I think some of this is because e-plugins are hard to write. Apparently, the new version of Evolution, you can write really simple Python ones, and that's great, and I'm quite looking forward to that. And Thunderbird's had the extensions of stuff forever. But there seems to be more Thunderbird extensions to do stuff like My Little Button, or to help you, Jono, build a to-do list, or to take something and integrate, to help people other than the core Evolution developers.
Yeah, I mean, something I should stress is that the only time, it's only recently where I've really got quite excited about Evolution. So, there's little things now.
Have you been particularly bored recently?
A lot of time in airports.
So, for example, something I like is that, you know, in an email, so I have a meeting with my boss. We'll have a phone call meeting. He'll send me a list. He'll send me an email with the notes and listing the actions, right? That happens every meeting. One thing I did when I was using to-do lists in Evolution is go in there and I'd highlight one of the to-do list items, right click and say add to task list, right? And it'll add it to my to-do list. And it's things like that are really nice, how they kind of connect between. But what I want is I want my task list to live online somewhere, and I want my email lives online because it's IMAP, right? So I can access my email from my phone if I want to and things like that. But I want that with my task list. And in the same way that there's the back end for Google Calendar, now it starts making Evolution interesting because I want all my data online.
That's interesting because I bet you, I mean, take, say, Remember the Milk, which is the to-do list manager or to-do list or whatever online to-do list manager you use, whether it's one you wrote yourself or something. I'll bet money for most of the ones out there, there is a Thunderbird extension that integrates with them. And there isn't one for Evolution because up till now, it's the Evolution people who had to write it.
Yes, totally.
There's no third party Evolution extensions community. There are some third-party Evolution extensions, but not many.
It's interesting. It's the reason why I got turned off Thunderbird, because I used Thunderbird as my mail client for a long time. And I used it by pulling mail from Yahoo with POP.
Right.
But it was like I had a cron job on my server that basically did that every 5 minutes or whatever, or every 2 minutes. But basically, I used Thunderbird for a long time. I haven't used it recently, admittedly. Mm-hmm. But it always feels like a piece of cross-platform software to me. It feels like it doesn't really...
belong anywhere.
Belong. Yes. And that's the thing that kind of put me
on. Sorry, I'm going to take you to task about a couple of points, really. First of all, I argue that Evolution is a long-standing piece of software, because so is Thunderbird. It was Netscape's mail application. The Netscape suite, that is.
I don't think we're denying that it is. I mean, Evolution's long-standing, so is Thunderbird.
Yeah, so, I mean, argue... Aqua's saying that Evolution is one of the most... not long-standing...
Mature.
Mature, yeah. So, first of all, I'd argue with that statement. The other thing is, the benefit for me, I mean, this is a personal taste thing. Thunderbird, for me, it's just a mail application. It automatically remembers all the people I ever sent mail to and who I've received mail from. So I don't need to worry about a contacts list. I don't need a calendar application because I don't need one. I mean, you do, clearly. I've seen your calendar. It's insane, the amount of things that you've got planned all the time. I don't need that, but there are plugins for Thunderbird that plug into Google Calendar. Or you can have your own local calendar. And all the stuff that Thunderbird doesn't do that you want it to do, there are plugins out there that pretty much do it. I was amazed that it doesn't tell you how big your attachments are. And there's a plugin to do it, which is a bit pointless, but there's pretty much a plugin out there to do everything.
I think I must be the only person in the world who doesn't need a calendar.
Possibly
I just don't do enough interesting stuff.
Do you just not do it? I mean, I've got two calendars, my work one and my home one, and they're both full.
No, I think my social life is just... So I've got shit organized. I don't know what I'm doing tomorrow.
I get shit organized until December, like in my work calendar. I've got events going on until December.
My brain has already organized everything that I've got to do, but I tend not to plan more than a week or two in advance.
Yeah. But I do things like, when I hear about bands...
Get
like,
a daughter.
When I hear about like bands playing, I'll go through, like, I'll go to the Metal Hammer website every so often, and I'll just add all of the things that are interesting to my calendar. Because I use my calendar as a means to, when I look at my week...
Yeah.
And I'll see things. So, like, all deadlines and stuff goes in there, obviously, but also things... So, you know, if we so like, today I had a meeting with the guys in the team, and basically we said, these are all the things we need to do on the Ibex release on schedule. And we went through and not only added the deadlines, but also added, we need to start thinking about this 3 weeks before
possibly
the deadline.
Yeah, the difference between your job and my job is your job is a lot more deadline-based than mine is.
And you're using your calendar to plan with...
Yeah.
Which means you need decent calendoring support. Yeah. I mean, as I say, I use
Google Calendar.
I have a list of things
awesome.
I need to do, but there's no sort of deadlines.
Probably Google Calendar is when you go abroad.
Yes.
And
I agree with you.
When time zone changes
happen, it fucks
everybody.
Yeah, the problem with that is that that's basically a hard problem to solve. Evolution seems to do quite a good job of calendaring.
Yeah.
I find, but it talks to the Exchange calendar and nobody else does.
Yeah, there's the one thing. The one big selling point of Evolution is it talks to Exchange.
Yes.
Is that any good? Because I believe that it used to be a bit ropey.
No, it's now. I mean, I've been using it now for a couple of months and it's fine. I was amazed to discover that what it actually does, when Microsoft released Outlook Web Access, the web front end to Exchange, it actually contains this whole clever WebDAV API thing where you can make sort of web requests and get back machine readable data. And it talks to that. Bloody well done, Microsoft. Huge big applause. And Evolution talks to that rather than using the secret undocumented Exchange protocol.
So, yeah, I think we all have this memory of it screen scraping web access.
Not anymore.
Maybe this is why it used to be ropey.
Yes.
It's
now fine. I mean, I occasionally run into problems where if I'm trying to pull a name off the global address list, it'll hang for like 5 seconds. But I think that's because it's trying to pull the global address list over a web interface.
To be honest, five seconds is livable.
I've got a question for you, Mr. Bacon. Mm. Right. You've been using Evolution for 4 years, you say. I've probably been using Thunderbird for two and a half, three. And I've had Thunderbird go wrong. The two cases are when I received 180,000 emails in a night. And the other one, whilst...
Ouch.
This is automated emails.
Is that when you published your Passion Star photos?
No.
Is that when you were selling Viagra on your website?
No.
Oh, fuck off.
No, this is somebody wrote an automated routine that sent an email every time if anything went wrong. And they wrote it wrong, and it went fucking crazy overnight. Sent me 180,000 mails.
It considered sending an email to be a wrong thing.
Went to Adam Sweet's fail box.
Jesus Christ.
Sorry, anyway, you believe
I despair. And the other one was like, I received a fucking 700 meg email, which of course, Thunderbird caches everything locally.
GoPorn.tv.
So all your search caches and stuff. Shut up. I've got two grinning arseholes staring at me now. And basically, my old work PowerBook just wasn't strong, powerful enough to chew through all this mail and update all the caches of all the mail I'd received. And so I've had Thunderbird go wrong. And again, as I said, because it's an inbox, you can just pull it out. Or you can... I've never had Thunderbird go wrong and eat my mail. Have you had that?
I've never had Evolution eat my mail. I've never had anything eat
my
mail. Yeah. The one thing that Evolution does when it does hang is when the one time I noticed it hanging, and I need to report a bug about this, is when essentially a wireless network goes away. Let's say you're in an airport or something. Wireless network goes away and you try to close it, and it will close at some point, but it'll take like 2 or 3 minutes to close.
For it to give up.
Yeah. Using Evolution now, as I say, I've been using it for a couple of months, my work email, and it's been rock solid. I've not had a single problem with it.
Mm.
I tried using it 2 or 3 years ago, and it crashed about 15 times and ate my mail and everything, and I got rid of it. I actually wrote a big rant about it on my website and then went back to using Mozilla Thunderbird.
Have you had it go wrong? I mean, have you had it crash and you've been able like go seriously wrong and you've been able to recover it, for example?
The extent where, I mean, it crashes occasionally, but not that often, very rarely. And when it does crash, you know, it'll ask you if you want to kind of restore how it was.
Wow.
And the only thing that's annoying about it is that when you say no, don't restore it, because I always just think, just go back to the original state, I'll be fine. For some reason, it doesn't show the message preview pane, so you've got to go in and switch that back on again. That's only quirk
that's
about
reasonably
it.
Trivial,
but I mean, the reason why I started using Thunderbird back then is because it was crashing all the time. I tried using Evolution, it was crashing all the time. I thought, fuck this, and I started using Thunderbird, and Thunderbird was always rock solid, always.
The one thing I have to say about Thunderbird is, I always find it really weird that you set up, the first time you set up an account, it sets you up your outgoing, you set up your outgoing SMTP server, and every subsequent account you set up, it uses the same SMTP server. It doesn't ask you for another one. You actually have to manually go in, set up a new outgoing server if you want to use your outgoing server for each of your accounts. And I find that really weird.
A male admin speaks.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you're one of the people that believes that SPF, sender policy framework thing, where it checks your DNS, you can set up a thing in your DNS that says only accept mail from this domain if it came from this IP address or range of IP addresses or something like that. Ask Aid. Ack looks confused. Aid.
A mail admin continues.
Yeah. I mean, people argue about whether SPF's a good thing or not, but using a single outgoing SMTP server for multiple accounts, Gmail, adamsweet.org, and stop laughing, and like other accounts, that breaks SPF.
It's interesting that you, Adams, speaking as someone who knows a lot more about email than I do, chooses Thunderbird rather than Evolution. I mean, to be honest with you, I would say that if you're the sort of person who likes Eclipse for development, then you're the sort of person who would like Evolution for email. Is that a reasonable summary? Or is that unfair? There are lots of people who like Eclipse.
I think that's a really good analogy. I think basically it's an integrated graphical email. Well, productivity. Well, kind of. PIM.
Don't call it a productivity application.
Yeah, it's a PIM, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay. I ought to say, right? There was a thing came up on Bull's Log mailing list the other day with fucking Dave Morley, incidentally, complaining that IMAP was broken or something. And I actually
did you ask him to switch his computer off and turn it back on again?
Yeah, I did. Told him to press the NE key. sorry, Dave. I said I don't like Evolution because these lists of reasons waste too much screen real estate and blah 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 blah. And I thought, I actually ought to give Evolution a try. So I have, but I haven't really used it much. And the other thing is, does anyone know of any of the Linux or GNOME email clients that do cool stuff that Outlook does? I don't like Outlook, but one cool thing I saw in Outlook was basically you can set a mail filter that it receives mail. If it's got this as the subject line or whatever, it's got this kind of matching parameter, you can tell it to print it, automatically print it, things like that.
Thunderbird will certainly do that.
You'd probably have to write
an extension to provide the printing thing. Evolution certainly won't do it by default, I don't think.
I'll tell you what.
You could presumably write an e-plugin to do it.
I think you could probably do it in Kmail, but I'd have to check.
A deal with you all.
Shit.
Oh, dear.
I will use Thunderbird, right? Test it, and I'll try and use it not only for email, but also try and plug in these things like to do some of the calendar and stuff will try that. You will use Evolution, Adam Sweet, right? Proctor, Kmail yes. boy. You're saying that you're using GNOME, right? You use Evolution.
Yeah, fair enough. Do it.
And Ack, you can use Kmail.
No!
There's nothing wrong with Kmail.
You can pull Gmail over, I'm not a problem.
Do we have a deal?
Strongly reluctant.
We'll report on it in the next show.
Yep, I'll try using Kmail for a week.
I can have a crack at it. I pull everything apart from the show at lugradio.org over IMAP.
I use IMAP for everything, so I can test this and still be working.
I use everything over POP3, so this could be interesting. But yeah.
Ooh.
Move into the future, man. IMAP.
Sadly, can't.
Fresh from our extravaganza in the United States, we're going to bring you Lug Radio Live in the UK.
Indeed. Yeah. On the 19th and 20th of July in glorious, glorious Wolverhampton.
Again.
Again, you know, and we're sorry about that.
We can't think of anywhere else less shit. So,
Dudley.
Yeah, we're back.
So, 19th and 20th of July. Yeah, to say, the call for papers is open.
And the call for exhibitors is open.
So if you're interested in speaking at Lug Radio Live in the UK, or you're interested in exhibiting, or you're interested in sending us loads of stuff to go in the goodie bags, then contact us at show@lugradio.org.
It's great as well because we've already seen the Lug Radio community getting into it, and people like Dave Morley and Ron Welsted have already been kicking in and sorting out crew and people like that. So Lug Radio is a very community event, so if you want to help out, let us know.
Yep, if you want to know more about it, go to lugradio.org/live.
So, it's the end of the show.
Indeed.
Time for the emails.
Yes, indeed. And we have an email from MPT, Matthew Paul Thomas.
Yes.
Famous usability guy saying, it's still not the end of the show.
Regular listeners might recall that he's emailed us about this before.
He has emailed us about this before. He says, you said it's the end of the show in the last show he listened to. You said it's the end of the show 30 minutes and 39 seconds before the end of the show. That doesn't quite match your previous record of 32 minutes and 57 seconds, but it's still a mammoth effort. I'd just like to say we're still keeping it real for you guys. He actually writes in with something proper, which is, say, your discussion of application brand names versus generic names in the last episode was quite funny, touched on another problem. Every so often, one of a distribution's high-profile applications will be taken in quality by a competing application, like F-Spot getting better than G-Thumb, for example. If a distributor...
Or G-Thumb.
If... G-Thumb. If a distributor... Like, Kumail, isn't it? If a distributor switches which application they ship by default, how should they communicate that to people upgrading? Yes. I mean, quite a few people have written in about our...
This is my argument.
About our discussion about... naming of applications in the menus and so on.
Some of them were tirades.
Yeah, and basically they're all saying I was wrong, and I get it.
Shock horror.
Your point is taken. Thank you.
Cordially rejected.
No, I'm pretty much in agreement. I can see the argument for letting people know that they're using Banshee Media Player rather than Rhythmbox Media Player or whatever.
Thanks very much, Muppet Thomas.
Okay, thank you, MPT.
I ought to point out, I really like the thought that we fucking irritate people in these little ways repeatedly, and it amuses me to think that fucking MPT has heard this, think, it's not the fucking end of the show, I bet it's miles from the end, and then has rewound to see exactly how far the show was.
He's keeping notes on this, he's probably drafted somewhere as
it'd be a very, very, very easy to understand graph if he's true.
It's funny, because I never really met MPT that much, and he works for Canonical now, and he's either moved or is moving to London. And
oh, really? Cool.
Yeah, and I was talking to him one day when he was in the office, and I was sort of saying to him, the thing that amazed me when he wrote that thing about, you know, all these defects in Ubuntu and these little usability things.
Him?
Yeah, he wrote that.
48 things or whatever.
Yes. Yeah, and one thing that he said was
I've been reading the stuff he's been writing for years and years and years.
In Firefox, all of the... in Firefox? in Firefox. Sorry, I just had a stroke. In Firefox, each of the icons, apart from the home icon, was 2D and the home icon was 3D. And I was like, how did you even fucking notice that? And it's like, I don't quite understand it myself, but it just seems to happen. He's got this incredible eye for detail.
This is what you need if you're going to be a big usability person, I guess,
isn't it? He's got a very subtle sense of humour.
Obsess over little details like that.
Indeed.
He does seem like a genuinely cool guy, despite repeatedly booting us about this end of the show.
I just like the thought of him sitting there with a little irritated face and kind of comedy...
And a stopwatch.
Yeah, cartoon steam coming out of his ears as he rewinds the show to see how far
The other thing which I like, another slight MPT story, is that when we were at the Boston Ubuntu Developer Summit, we were there and it was Halloween, and I was like saying to Daniel, who's on my team, I said, like, I've got to fucking dress up for Halloween. It's America, it's Halloween, they love it over here. And everybody was really reserved, like, oh, I don't know if I want to dress up. So Daniel and I went to this bizarre sex shop, and I bought a Batman outfit, and he bought this, like, pimp outfit. He's like the coolest German pimp you've ever seen. And we came back, and nobody was really that interested in dressing up, right? So we walked into the UDS dressed as Batman and pimp, right? And then a few minutes later, MPT arrived dressed as this, like, wizened old man with a long moustache. Like the most serious usability guy in the world, dressed as a fucking
old man.
Fu Manchu.
He looked like the guy, you know, the guy who you know in Gremlins, the guy who runs the shop,
the old Chinese guy.
Anyway,
power to you, brother.
He's a good guy. So anyway, we've had an email from Bradley M. Alexander, who the subject of the email is "Good on ya." I'm about to disagree with you.
I remember this email.
Hey, gents.
I mean, this was funny, too.
Congratulations on Lug Radio Live USA. I regret that I was unable to attend, but I must say that the audio from this one was the best yet. Thank you. And compared to the audio from 2007, not much of a fucking achievement. Good on you, guys. And by the way, we should thank Tony Whitmore and Laura for that.
We should do that. And Ted for the video.
And Ted for the video.
From MediaArchives.net.
Yeah. Yes. He says, I have but one question. Is it a coincidence that the venue was sitting atop a gigantic shrine to the Sony PlayStation, the Metreon, a Sony Entertainment Center, or did Jono arrange it that way? How did you get him out of the Sony stores to attend Lug Radio Live USA? Well,
most of the part, we didn't.
In answer to your question, I was
amazingly impressed when I went to visit the venue for the first time that there was a PlayStation shop there. And I did go, I did like a Al-Qaeda style recce of the venue when I went there and got quite distracted and actually ejected from the PlayStation store for videoing.
I could say
the airport, really.
the thing which disturbs me most is three or four times we managed to lose Jono downstairs. It turns out he wasn't in the PlayStation store at all. He was in Starbucks buying more of that iced coffee stuff with all the passion tea or something.
Oh, passion tea.
Man passion.
Nothing like cold passion tea. Three Splendors, one tea bag. Anyway.
Okay.
Yeah.
Move on. Altogether too obsessive about this passion tea stuff, man. I have to say.
And a skinny latte.
Iced chai latte. Anyway, sorry, move on. Yeah.
I've also discovered the Americano, which is quite nice, with an extra shot.
It's coffee, is it?
But I need to have sugar in that, and I don't have sugar in a skinny latte. Yeah.
Oh, really?
How interesting.
Anyway,
How interesting.
Caffeine Radio Live.
So, no, in answer to your question, Google sourced the venue. I had nothing to do with it. He said, seriously, though, I'd like to ask if you will pimp my podcast. I'm doing the Armored Penguin podcast over at www.armoredpenguin.net. It's a Linux and open source security podcast. Episode 0 came out on April the 14th. Bad news. And hopefully, by the time we read this, episode 1 will be out. Thanks very much, gents. So, yeah, thanks very much, Bradley.
ArmoredPenguin.net.
ArmoredPenguin.net. Go and listen to episode 0 and possibly episode 1.
Cool.
Right, I've got an email here from David Futcher about Gobuntu, which is ironic since we've already spoken about it in the show. Hi, the radio team. Just started listening to the show and I'm working my way back through the back catalogue, halfway through season 3 at the moment. Could Jono or anyone else that works for Canonical, I lost track of it, probably all of you by now.
No! There were only ever two of us and then Matt left, so there's only Bacon.
Ack did get through the job interview process, so he can...
that's right.
Lies, unfortunately.
Could one of you who worked for Canonical pull some strings and get a Gobuntu renamed to Akbuntu? the name might actually have something to do with free software, and someone other than Ack might actually start using it.
Ironic, given the earlier conversation.
Yeah, and now Ack hates freedom. Is probably not a good idea.
Yes, thank you.
Ack actually does hate freedom.
He actually hates freedom. He thinks that the project should not be continuing because it's not possible to love freedom.
That's
despises
right.
What freedom can achieve.
Clearly disagree with freedom.
Yeah, you are absolutely correct. Moving on.
P.S. Was it Jono's Ubuntu Open Week session this week? It's true, he really does talk a load of shit.
Thank you very much.
On the other hand, he's now gone right back up in my estimation.
No, it's true, I do talk a lot of shit.
It's true.
It is true, I'm not going to deny it.
We've had an email from Ted Bullock.
Ted what?
Bullock. As in
Bullock with a U.
Yep.
As in cows and things, yeah. Says, just listened to episode 14 and thought I would send along my experience with the iRiver Clicks. Christmas 2006, I received a very sleek iRiver Clicks, which, as you mentioned, supports OGG. Yippee.
Sorry to interrupt. This is click. All right. Not clear. To.
Yeah. C-L-I-X, right.
I never said anything.
Oh, for God's sake.
Children, please.
Proceed.
But would it work with Linux? No. At the time, the only driver that remotely promised to work with the device was libmtp, except that it didn't.
Didn't work.
Didn't work. Right, okay. Fair enough. Sorry, lost track. It didn't work. It sucked. And I was sure the Christmas would be ruined forever. Sorry, I'm losing my will to live at the moment, let alone my ability to read.
Hang on a second. He thought his Christmas would be ruined forever.
He got a new toy for Christmas and it didn't work, and you know, he was most disappointed. Great. And he probably found out that Father Christmas doesn't exist. And yeah, terrible.
It's like someone would go out and buy one of those, you know, robot dogs and then not really care about it often, isn't it?
Who would do a thing like that?
I wonder.
No idea.
He says,
I can't believe he did that.
He goes on. So I chose to do something about it and made my engineering school project focus on working with the developers to get libmtp working with the clicks. Together we managed to stabilize the driver. And now I am free to sling songs. Yes, so sling songs, metadata, and Albemarle back and forth via Amarok. And soon Banshee as well.
That's very cool.
Also, there was a great experience, and I absolutely loved the device. So there you go. Someone who got something that didn't work with Linux, and then worked to make it work.
Actually, got the thing, sat down and worked with the developers.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, that's
nice
cool.
One. Well played.
It's the open source way.
Email from a guy in Serbia.
What's the name?
Right, you ready for this? First name is Dusan, and his surname is... bloody hell.
How many letters? How many Zs?
Well, it would be Nedeljkovic. Upon fact, there's a J in the middle of it. I can't work out how you pronounce it.
Maybe he's just Nedeljkovic.
Nedeljkovic.
Maybe just Adam's guess, having not seen the name.
Maybe he just accidentally headbutted the keyboard while writing the email.
To be honest with you, I think his first name, I think, is Susan rather than Dusan.
Susan
Nakovic or something.
Susan Nakovic.
Right, anyway, right, he's from Serbia. He says, just want to tell you that your show rocks and you keep me laughing and interested in every show all the time. Fuck that guy complaining in the last show about you going mainstream. If I wanted to listen to something serious, I would listen to the BBC. Thank you.
Thank you.
You have many, many listeners in Serbia.
I feel we may have just lost one by calling him Susan Nakovic.
Susan fucking Nakovic.
Thanks to your last show, I finally decided to try out Python and Django, and I'm loving it. Wicked. That's superb. Great stuff. Keep us informed. Keep us laughing. Keep us free. Until next time, Boonga Bunga. Susan Nakovic, Ubuntu Serbian Loco Administrator.
Cool. So, Susan,
can we work out his name? For fuck's sake, show it to me.
Dusan Nedeljkovic.
Dusan.
Dusan is not the hard bit, right? No. Nedeljkovic or something?
Okay, at this point, having just read his name, I'm willing to concede that it's actually not that easy.
I mean, I could normally have a punt at these things. You just got a random Joey in the middle of it.
Hang on. Dusan. Oh, fuck. It's basically... It's just that J.
Yeah, exactly.
It's basically Nedeljkovic.
Nedeljkovic.
And...
Anyway.
So, should we read some more emails?
Should we read some more emails, or should we just...
So now we discover we've got a fantastic Serbian radio fan base. Cool.
Well,
we've all got names like that.
If one of them would like to drop a Serbian dictionary in the post, we'd appreciate it. Thank you very much.
If you're from Serbia, let us know, because that's cool.
That is really cool.
And having just butchered it and insulted his name, I think I'd like to say that we think that's cool.
We do, actually.
Wick.
It's probably me, last, because we've got one
Adamski,
more.
Adamski, read an email.
I love this email, it's brilliant.
I wonder what it is.
It's from Stephen Garrity, and it's entitled Awkward Family Dinner. I love this. I just finished listening to Season 5, Episode 15, and have a comment on the debate about the egoless desktop. There are two kinds of debate. One... vigorous, intense, enlightening, and healthy debate that makes you stretch your opinion to consider and appreciate the views of others you might have opposed.
So normal look radio debate, then, yeah?
Well, number two. Angry, awkward, and a personal debate that makes you feel like you're stuck at a friend's house for dinner while their parents break up in front of you.
Oh, dear.
This debate was the second type.
Oh.
That said, I do enjoy the show. Hope Look Radio Live went well. Keep up the good work. Cheers, Stephen Garrity.
Oh, which discussion was that?
The egoless desktop,
about names of things on menus.
Which I seem to remember you two got incredibly heated.
One thing that Ak and I have discovered in our long and graceful relationship with each other for the last...
Graceful? Are you joking?
Last 7 years or so, is that sometimes people think that we're having a Barney. I don't believe we've ever actually had a Barney.
I don't think we've ever had a proper argument, but I can see how it sounds like it from the outside.
Yeah. I have to admit, I went to What the Hack with these two guys, and what they're like on the show is what they're like all the time. Unbearable. I was trapped in a car with the two of them on the way back from the airport, and they really do argue the toss about the most pointless things to the nth degree, and you're just thinking, what the fuck
it's
are
all
you
hack.
On about?
It's not all me.
You're the pair of you are about, and you start arguing
to
cross
be honest
purposes.
With you, if you just acknowledge that I'm right at the beginning, like you always end up doing at the end of the argument, if you acknowledged it at the beginning, it wouldn't
The problem is that Ak normally starts out with an absolutely indefensible position. And they argue towards each other, and then end up arguing at cross purposes. It's just impossible to listen to, but they do actually hold it together on the show. So
indefensible position.
It's ridiculous, the pair of you. The one I'm on about on the way back from What the Hack is you believed that
the royal family
were ideal, and a dictatorship is the perfect way to run the world.
I'm like, both of which aren't the case, and I stand by my argument.
You fucking royalist annoying asshole. I put the boot into the royal family in every talk I do now.
Shut up, Republican.
I'm not a Republican.
Or do you just like Republicans? I forget.
So I have to admit, I quite like Republicans.
You remember where you heard it first? Right, we need to not talk anymore, otherwise NBG sends another email. Back.
Okay, I believe you like one particular Republican, but that's not here. That's not for the show.
Thank you for that.
George W. Bush.
I believe at this point we need to choose a winner.
We do.
Winner.
I think we've already chosen the winner.
Mr. Garrity. We're very sorry for making you feel like it was your parents' breakup all over again.
Ax slept in the spare room for a couple of days, and he's actually sleeping in the spare room at the moment as well.
Thank you.
I suspect the debate we had earlier about whatever we had a debate about earlier in the show, the first segment that we did.
The Go Butchers.
I think that probably came a good close to the awkward family dinner.
Yes. Oh God.
Hopefully.
I think so.
Well,
anyway,
it's a special sauce.
We're sorry if it did.
So what you should do, Mr. Garrity, is email show@lugradio.org, tell us what your address is. Jono can read it out on the show.
Tell us what size t-shirt you want, yes.
Size and address, what we want.
Yeah.
Okay, now you ready for this? Get ready to press the button. You ready? Thank you very much. It's the end of the show.